Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
All week, all year, it's all college football on the Chuck Oliver Show. Thank y'all, everybody, for coming here for your college football talk every single day. I keep the lights on, food in the cabinet, because of college football talk. So thank y'all. Now let's talk Super Bowl. Not really Super Bowl. Actually, you know what? I'll give you one Super Bowl opinion. It is difficult for me to wrap my brain around, because I'm going to, you know, put a dollar or two on it. I don't know. We broadcast at casino, so it happens. It's hard for me to walk to the window and hand over Franklin and bet on a team whose quarterback has a bum ankle against the Philadelphia pass rush. So it'd be really hard to get comfortable with that Patrick Mahomes ankle thing. Oh, he's better. He's feeling so fine. And they just swallowed up Brock Purdy and ended the game in the second quarter. So that's my opinion for Sunday. It's looking like either Eagles or take some of the proposition plays. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is back. Now, that's good for the Chiefs. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, first-round pick, couple drafts back, and he's their starting running back. But he had an ankle thing back, 2 months ago. But I saw that he is back from the injured list, and so they will at least have him at their disposal. Want to talk a little bit about Stetson Bennett and hopefully a lesson he learns. And that lesson is you do need other people right now during a very specific window of your life. You need other people right now, and you need to play the game, and I mean just like every other player. All right, Chuck, what are you talking about? I'm trying to help Stetson here. Stetson has succeeded. Stetson has a very, titanium independent streak in him. And it works for him. That doesn't even come close to describing the accuracy of it. It has actually, I think, it's reinforced it. Yep. I thought I could be me, and I can be me. And look, I've got two rings, so screw it. So you can be that way. And now that you don't need anything, truly, with college football, there's always endorsement opportunities. So I would just say, maybe you find yourself, and I don't know if this is for Stetson or not, but as the sideline reporter, if you want to, maybe you find yourself as just sort of the ambassador, the former player who's the ambassador for the program, and man, that turns into mailbox money. I'm talking about just the ability to provide and maybe accumulate wealth. There's a difference, you know, to live comfortably. I don't know. I have lived paycheck to paycheck. I had a goal. I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. And then I think the next step is to live comfortably where it's not paycheck to paycheck. To me, that qualifies as comfortable. There's a level, I don't even know what it really is. It's called accumulating wealth. That's the next level. And I can't even really conceptualize what that must be like. I was talking to a Mercedes dealership owner. And he told me the story, and I went and Googled it. I was like, wow. Yeah, Lionel Richie came into a Montgomery Mercedes dealership on Christmas Eve. About 7 Mercedes. Well, I can't even, I don't know, what do they cost? 75,000, Lionel Richie, probably nice. All right, $100,000, because, yeah, they were probably nice. That's accumulating wealth. I can't even conceptualize that right now. For Stetson, he's got a chance to do that. If you want a tremendous discrepancy in two numbers, and you're going to have a lot of choices here, I'll just give you a couple. But if you want to see a discrepancy in numbers that should have some sort of relationship, now this is a bit skewed because, again, it because of the position, I've said that you need to throw quarterback as always the answer to everything. But if you want to see a wide gulf between two numbers that really should be related, go look at Chase Daniels' career earnings and go look at Chase Daniels' career passing yards. Chase Daniels has been on NFL rosters for 13 seasons. Chase Daniels has thrown, I don't want to embarrass Dan. Chase Daniels has thrown 9 touchdown passes. Now, what he's done is allowed a lot of teams to go into the season knowing if something happens, we're probably okay. Chase Daniels has 9 career touchdown passes. Chase Daniels has been on an NFL roster for 14 seasons, actually. He has career earnings, like, I'm talking checks cashed, $41,828,000. So 9 touchdown passes. So being on an NFL roster, it can change your family tree. And I don't know anything about Dan. Do you know anything about Stetson's family tree? Maybe he comes from money. He's Johnny Manziel. Maybe he's not. I don't know. But I would say to Stetson, you have a chance to accumulate wealth. Not a lot of folks do. And, like, not only does Chase Daniels, 9 touchdowns, 41, he's got a pension, too. He's got an NFL pension. Clipboard Jesus. My gosh, what were Charlie Whitehurst? Now, he played. He played some. Charlie Whitehurst just kept showing up. I'm on an NFL roster. Another year on the pension. Then you max out, but it's great work. And Stetson, I want that for you. For that to happen, you need other people in your corner, sort of, to side with you because you don't have separation, sort of, physical, like, measurable skills. That's what the NFL is going to say. That's their evaluation of you in Indianapolis or a pro day or a personal workout or anything else. So out of the candidates, we're going to use this 4th, 5th, 3rd. I don't know what round. Out of the candidates, we're going to use this not first round pick on to get a quarterback. All right, who's in the pool? Well, if there's 4 guys or 2 guys, you want somebody to say, no, it's 1 guy. It's Stetson Bennett. We're drafting him with our 5th round, 6th round, just whatever pick. Brock Purdy. He's 7th round. Like, he was the last pick. So, Stetson, you want that. When you are Cam Newton, now, this is the great example. Cam Newton, that is, like, physical skills and stature and measurables and tape measure and stopwatch and, oh, my gosh, you know, just all of that stuff. Cam Newton is the physically overwhelming person, and I mean just looking at him before he does anything. You're like, oh, good Lord. Even Cam, he showed up in Indianapolis, and when I said play the game, I said you got to play the game just like every other player. That's who I was talking about. Cam was probably going to be the 1-1. He showed up and played the game anyway. He did. So, I would say to Stetson, as far as the foolishness, it started with the banging on doors and where's my room? In a East Dallas middle-class neighborhood. So it started, that was the first negative. And then right after that, it was, oh yeah, and he was invited to the Senior Bowl and we don't like that he turned us down. So that's Stetson's two most recent, and the Stetson turning down the Senior Bowl, that had already happened. But there wasn't commentary about it until after everything with the Senior Bowl had come and gone. Even if he were a late replacement, even if he were a guy who could just pop in and we'll see what we can do with Stetson because he's here a little bit late. And his people made it clear, he or his people, whoever. But the Senior Bowl knocked on the door. They're like, no, nah, we're good. Okay. Well, now see, that's a fine answer for a lot of folks. No, I'm doing my own thing. Okay. Well, we'll see you in Indianapolis or we'll see you in, you know, wherever we, oh, Norman, Oklahoma for pro day. You know, if you're whatever, we'll see you. Okay. And that's fine. And for almost every player who looks at the Senior Bowl or the whatever postseason All-Star game and said, no, nah, I'm doing my own thing, for almost every one of those guys, the response is, all right, see you at the Hoosier Dome. See you at Lucas Oil. See you up there. That's not the response for Stetson now because Stetson singled himself out. Of anyone who was invited and said no, maybe somebody said a knee, somebody said a shoulder, somebody said I got a baby being born, somebody said my father's sick. Stetson said, and others, no, I'm good, I'm doing my own thing. Okay, great. Well, all of y'all who said no, best to you. We've invited someone else. If y'all are going to the combine, Godspeed. And just about everybody else, the next time you hear about them is when they're running the 40 and are they faster than Rich Eisen? And boy, they better be. Stetson did something to make that not the next time you heard from him. And then you heard from the Senior Bowl people, or I guess surreptitiously, or the NFL people, or whoever it was, that, yeah, we don't like that he wasn't here. And then that happened, because that means that he really wasn't, you know, because he wanted to, whatever. When I say play the game, just like every other player, I don't mean you got to play the game. Show up, and you got to be tough, and you got to be ready for no. I mean play the game when you don't have a contract. Whether it's a free agent, whether it's a guy who just left college, if you don't have a contract and you would like to have a contract, some people don't. If you'd like to have a contract, you need to play the game at least a little bit. Andre Smith is just rare. It was, and I'm not picking on the, he's a grown man. He didn't care if I don't pick on him. Yeah. Andre Smith got agent stuff and what sent home from the, couldn't play in the Sugar Bowl. And then he showed up at the combine and was jiggling around everywhere. And it's like corn chips and ice cream sandwiches. And just, it was bad. And I think it was the sixth overall pick. He didn't play the game. He's like, screw the game. I'm going to Baskin Robbins. Cam showed up and played the game. Just about everybody else. So I'm, you know, it's not foolproof. But Andre Smith might have been the best left tackle in the draft. He got drafted and played right tackle. He's played around as far as positions and teams. But Andre Smith, he got his money. And he was the sixth overall. I think it was the sixth overall pick. That's not probably where you're looking draft window-wise. So you need other people. And if you want to get in the NFL, if you want to give yourself the best chance possible, play that other game I'm talking about. And that would be my advice if you want it. We're going to take a break. We'll continue on this Tuesday next.
Always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the King of College Football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
Rolling through Tuesday on the Chuck Oliver Show. We talk college football. 9 states, 56 sticks. Appreciate the blessing, folks. Football is not a complicated game, not the approach offensively. And I mean this, and there are NFL head coaches who don't truly understand this. Get the ball to your best players. Like, some of the silliness I've heard with guys coming out of the draft, like Kyle Pitts. But what position is he? He's the – here's the ball position. Whatever. Snap the ball to him. I don't care. He's the – like, here's the ball. Like, do something because you're better than that guy on defense. He's that guy. It's just get the ball to your best players. And I was watching the Super Bowl, the Patriots-Rams Super Bowl from about 2 decades. Mike Martz had Marshall Faulk, and he thought that he knew better stuff. And, like, I'm like, you're the head coach of a team in the Super Bowl, and you don't understand. Just get the ball. I don't even care if they're expecting it. That's the thing about it. All right, you, Marshall Faulk, you're better than that guy. Ugh. Lane Kiffin gets it, which is why if you look at the offenses he has installed as an assistant, as a head coach, as a coordinator, you name it, man. Like, it's six places, five places. It's five different offenses. He's fantastic. However, I can't tell you what that's going to look like in 2023 because I don't know who the quarterback's going to be, and I don't know exactly what they're going to do if it is Jackson Dart again. I know somebody to ask. Let's welcome on right now. Man who you can hear on the sidelines a lot of the games there. Also, ESPN, SEC Network. It is Richard Cross. How are you, brother?
Chuck, I'm great. Good morning.
Appreciate you coming on, man. Jackson Dart, is he going to be the quarterback this coming season? And what would the offense look like?
I think so. But I don't think it's going to be easy. I think he will be pushed in spring practice. And I don't really anticipate right now this being one of those deals where there's a competition that carries over into the summer. But I could be wrong about that because when you bring in a guy like Spencer Sanders from Oklahoma State, who's got, 85 career touchdown passes and has started north of 40 games, that's not a guy that thinks that he's coming in to be a backup. Now, he certainly has not been promised a starting job, but I don't think Jackson Dart has been promised a starting job either. So I think they'll have a healthy competition in the spring. Of course, Walker Howard's in the mix as well. I think that's a year away. I think that's the plan for after Jackson Dart or Spencer Sanders, and was a really nice pickup for Ole Miss through the transfer portal. But your question about what does the offense look like, I mean, if it's Jackson Dart, I think what you saw a year ago is what you will see again, a heavy dose of the running game with Quinshon Judkins leading the way. And Jackson Dart's got the ability to make plays with his feet. And if they feel good about the quarterback position and the depth of that position, I can't help but wonder if that means maybe more Jackson Dart with his feet because you're not as concerned about, oh my goodness, what happens if our quarterback gets hurt?
Talk a little bit about Quinshon because that's kind of who I was referring to, and actually it was more the contrast between when he had Matt Corral, it was, all right, he's the guy, he's the ball's in his hands. Matt, you're going to do stuff. It was simpler than that last year. Here's this freshman running back that keeps getting in the end zone. Let's give him the ball. Did you have any inkling? And, where is that kid's mindset now in his first offseason on campus after having played his freshman year and just being so great?
Yeah, I'd be lying to you if I said I had an inkling. I did not. I don't follow recruiting as closely as some. I knew that internally they liked Quinshon Judkins. They liked the skill set that he brought to the table. And the whole under-recruited, yes, but, like, nobody knew about him. That idea that people kind of put out there when somebody burst onto the scene from the state of Alabama that didn't go to Alabama or Auburn, that's not entirely true. Ole Miss just got on him early, and they stayed on him, and he was loyal to that commitment kind of all the way in. Auburn made a late push to get him. They just didn't get him. I think your question about year two is an interesting one, right? Because in the era that we are in right now, based on the season that Quinshon Judkins had, he had a financially lucrative offseason, right? Lane Kiffin's talked about it openly. He was recruited. He announced a new NIL deal at Ole Miss. Somebody announced a new NIL deal for Judkins at Ole Miss that, yep, that makes him really well compensated. But even after that, teams kind of kept coming after him. And so that's where you are right now. The reason I say I'm interested to see what year two looks like is you wonder how a young person handles that success. Do they continue to work as hard as they did to get to that level? Do they continue to produce at the level to justify the compensation? It's kind of a whole new world on that front. But man, what a spectacular freshman year it was. Maybe the second best season we've seen for a freshman running back in the SEC. That may be overstating it, but I don't think so.
Wow. That would be going back about four decades. That's something or other. Wrapping up, my good friend Richard Cross.
Going back to 1980, right?
Yeah, that's what I would say. That's what Bill Bates would say. Wrapping up, Richard Cross. We got about a minute and a half here, so you can run a little bit. Pete Golding, discuss. Like how and why and what do you have?
Well, why? Because he's a really good recruiter, and he put good defenses on the field at Alabama, and he's got some family ties to the state of Mississippi, especially on his wife's side, and I think that was important maybe for their family. Lane Kiffin's really, really excited about this. He equated Pete Golding to getting a five-star recruit. I certainly understand some of the sentiment from Alabama fans who are like, oh, well, we're glad he's gone. Good luck to y'all with that. But look, this was an upgraded defensive coordinator for Ole Miss. Pete Golding was Alabama's defensive coordinator, Nick Saban's defensive coordinator for 5 years. And anybody that tries to convince you that Nick Saban was not a Pete Golding fan is just lying. They're lying to themselves and they're lying to you because he was. He went to battle with Sark when he went to Texas and a couple of other places to keep him on staff because he wanted him there at Alabama. Now, with that said, it's possible that they reached a point where Nick was like, either one, this is a really good opportunity for you. You should take it at this point in your career. Or two, you know what? We might be ready for some fresh blood on the defensive side. I'm not going to stand in the way of you taking this job. Maybe it would be a good opportunity. Ole Miss feels like it upgraded the defensive coordinator, and they needed to because that was not a very good defense a year ago. But, Chuck, regardless of who's calling the plays, they got to get deeper. They got to be better on the defensive line. They got to be better against the run. The back end should be okay, and they are continuing to kind of live dangerously through adding linebackers from the portal.
I don't mean we got to go, but it's like every time Ole Miss, and I mean historically throughout my lifetime, it seems every time Ole Miss gets a recruit or a coach not named Eli Manning, there's like a negative, well, it had to be for this reason. Like, you got Lane Kiffin from Auburn, well, or you kept, you know, you got a defensive coordinator from Bama or a recruit or whatever. I mean, I guess you're used to that too, probably. But, Rich, we'll discuss that next time, Richard, brother. Appreciate your time, man. Thanks for coming on.
All right, buddy. See ya.
All right, Richard Cross. Super Talk, also Sidelines. But it is, when they get a recruit or hire a coach from someone else or retain a coach, there's always, and it's in particular, it seems with Ole Miss versus other programs.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
The less time spent recruiting, more time you spend coaching. Chuck Oliver Show on a Tuesday. It's kind of the number one goal right now is player retention, just limiting whatever impact that is on your coach, your head coach, and the staff's schedules. More successful you are with retention, the less you have to go out and then recruit to replace those kids. So it's all one big ball of wax that is connected. Having a bunch of returning starters has never been a more nebulous phrase because so many, oh yeah, we've got eight starters coming back. Well, now like three of them are ours. Five of them were other people's starters, but yeah, we've got eight. They were somebody's starters last year, but there's eight of them. When you have a large number of your own starters back, it's like I'm looking through a Lindy's from 1992. You don't get into a team having like seven, eight, nine of their own starters coming back. That's a really unusual thing. in today's environment. But LSU may be staring at that. I want to welcome on right now a guy that we absolutely love. You can get him at theadvocate.com. Y'all know that, one of the best places for college football coverage, especially LSU. It is Wilson Alexander. Wilson, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing well, Chuck. Good to be with you today.
Doing all right. Let's talk returning starters on offense. Jaden Daniels, I would have guessed a lot of other outcomes for him after what last season kind of just jet rocketed into towards the end, but he's back in Baton Rouge to play quarterback for another season. Start with him and then work your way through, because there's a lot of returning talent that has either started or played a whole lot for him.
It all starts with Jaden Daniels, that conversation about returning talent, because he is so much of their offense. Accounted for about 68% of the total yardage last year because of what he does with his legs. And now LSU gets to bring him back and creates a lot of optimism on that side of the ball because of the continuity aspect of it. He can spend the offseason now working on details and timing with receivers, whereas last year, you know, he arrived about 2 weeks before spring practice after transferring over from Arizona State, and it was a lot of, you know, just getting used to the building and things like that. And now he gets to – all that's already done, you know, a year in the books, and so they get to work on chemistry and timing and, you know, heading into year two with all those pieces together could be really advantageous for LSU, because not only is it Jaden Daniels, but it's also – four of the five starters on the offensive line, plus somebody that fifth starter is, you know, probably going to be Garrett Dellinger. And he was a starter before he got injured about midway through the year. And so that looks like there's a lot of continuity there. All the running backs are back. Your starting tight end is back. Your leading receiver, Malik Nabers, is back. And there's other options with talent at wide receiver position to step up as the number two and the number three. And so, you know, there's about nine regular starters back on that side of the ball. And it creates quite a bit of optimism about what else you could accomplish in 2023.
All right, we'll flip it around to defense, because there was some individual star power, and it even developed sort of as the season unfolded. You can start with Harold Perkins or bounce wherever you want to, but just what are the prospects? Because I got kind of used to there being some upperclassmen up front for LSU.
Yeah, there's Mekhi Wingo up front at defensive tackle, who was a third-team AP All-American, team leader, played more snaps than anybody in Division I college football last year on the interior defensive line. He'll be back. He's going to miss the spring because of labrum surgery, but as soon as he's healthy, he slides right back into the lineup. But he maybe doesn't have, you know, that star power name recognition just yet, although he was, I think, a really, really solid player last year. You've got, you know, like you said, Harold Perkins. He'll be the face of LSU's defense. On the back end, Greg Brooks is a senior who played a lot of ball over the last now 4 years, going to be in his fifth season in the SEC after starting at Arkansas and then transferring over. But up front, it's a lot of new faces. Ovia Gofu, who's an edge rusher from Texas. Braden Swinson, a transfer edge rusher from Oregon. There's some defensive tackle depth that are transfers now. And then we'll see what happens with Mason Smith. You know, he's slated to return, on track to return, expected to. He's probably going to be able to do some limited individual work in the spring. But, you know, he's still coming off an ACL, so got to see kind of how he does once he gets into full contact. If all goes as expected, then, you know, maybe this will be the year now that he breaks out and has that really national sort of attention-grabbing season. He's another star, but maybe not one that everybody knows throughout the country yet.
Recruiting wrapped up for LSU like everybody else last Wednesday, and now you kind of tilt towards spring practice. Have they announced their spring practice dates? Because I was looking, and I kind of got a little calendar I keep filling out, and I checked yesterday, and I hadn't seen it. Has it been announced?
No, it hasn't been announced yet. They'll start, though, roughly 1 month from today for spring ball, but they haven't announced the dates yet.
All right. Any response locally just about the oddity of Tommy Rees now being an OC, not only in the SEC, but in the division? Obviously, Brian Kelly's former OC at Notre Dame. Like I said, just sort of an anecdotal thing that he's back now.
Yeah, I actually got a question about this on a radio show yesterday. And if there was kind of, you know, gave LSU any sort of, advantage because of Brian Kelly's sort of knowledge of Tommy Rees. And it is sort of just, I think, more of a fun storyline for all of us than probably anything else. the fact that Tommy Rees, you know, played for Brian Kelly at Notre Dame and then was his offensive coordinator there at the end of his Notre Dame tenure. You know, maybe it does help in some ways if, you know, late game situation, maybe Brian Kelly knows what Tommy Rees is thinking, but you know how that goes. It can be too much made of that sometimes, especially in the heat of a game. It's hard to kind of think through all that, but it is interesting to kind of now have that added layer of connection between the LSU and Alabama game. That'll be, you know, that first weekend of November and Brian Denny, and to see Tommy Rees on the opposite side just kind of adds another storyline to it.
All right, this is an opinion at the start, but maybe you got an answer. Do you believe that Jaden Daniels could be a legitimate emerging candidate for the Heisman Trophy this year? And that used to just be, I mean, I'd open up a mail, I'm sure you've done it, and you get like a mouse pad or a calendar or something that says, you know, Christian Ponder for Heisman. That used to always be the school. Now it can be Nike or Gatorade or Duracell or whomever sponsors the kid. Do you know if there's any thoughts or push about Jaden Daniels and the Heisman?
There hasn't been any sort of Heisman campaign started that I know of for him. I think the way Brian Kelly operates with those things usually anyway, I think about sort of his approach and philosophy to NIL, which is to support somebody, you know, and once they're on campus and they've proven themselves. And I guess that necessarily doesn't sound like it relates, but to me, in my head, that it's sort of like LSU wouldn't maybe start that until he's actually gone out and like really done it. And even then, you know, we'll see. Jaden Daniels, I mean, there are obviously early Heisman odds on him. It's within the realm of possibility if he plays like he did in that three-game stretch in particular, Florida, Ole Miss, and Alabama. If he does that for an entire season, then yeah, he will be a Heisman candidate, and he'll if he played like that for an entire season, gosh, he'd certainly be a finalist because he was fantastic in those three games. But he's got to go out and prove that he can do that over the course of the year, because after those three games, he struggled against Arkansas. He wasn't great against Texas A&M, although LSU's team did not play very well. And then, of course, he was pretty much just injured in the postseason. So we'll see kind of how he can do, you know, start to finish with a full offseason under his belt to work on that timing and get on the same page as the receivers and really work on the details of the offense. LSU fans know as well as anybody what can happen in year two of an offensive scheme after seeing, you know, that jump from 2018 to 2019. Nobody's expecting that around here, but they are hopeful that Jaden Daniels can continue to really push the ball downfield game after game after game instead of just sort of in spurts. And if he can do that, then he would definitely be in the running for and in the conversation for the Heisman.
Final question. Wilson Alexander, get him on Twitter at WHAlexander _. Read him at The Advocate. That's theadvocate.com. Of course, y'all all know that. Let's talk collective. I started yesterday's show talking about Nick Saban putting his name on the stationery with Yay Alabama, the new name, image, likeness collective, and, you know, the AD Byrne doing the same thing. LSU, maybe a week ago, they launched their own Bayou Traditions, and it's the same sort of thing. Fans can – it can be $10 a month, which is $120 a year by my math. Wilson, it can be $50,000 a year that a fan can just say, here's some money, and I don't know, you either get a signed Christmas card from the team trainer or Brian Kelly, depending on the donation level. This is a giant step forward from, like, the first year and a half of kind of fits and starts, isn't it?
Unless you had a collective working behind the scenes, it was very private. It was called Go Enterprises for the last year. And it started in early February, and I was told by as of last summer even, and it continued to be this way into the, you know, into the winter months, that it had built up several million dollars and that it had struck about 15, 20 NIL deals. But this was pretty low-key on the back end. The donors who were involved didn't want any sort of, you know, name recognition for this, didn't want to be outward with it. But LSU needed to take a more of a public-facing step, and the collective realized that as well. And so the collective started this essentially subsidiary, which is Bayou Traditions, and they're all sort of the same company. And so Bayou Traditions gets to kind of start, you know, with a bit of a leg forward because it already has, you know, as a company, some funds built up. But it's now the public-facing portion of this collective, and it is what LSU is partnering with directly. You've seen videos from Scott Woodward, Brian Kelly, Kim Mulkey, all the coaches asking fans and encouraging them to donate to Bayou Traditions because they can easily do so. Go to a website and type in your information, and, yeah, in exchange you can get some merchandise or you can get, like, a signed football, depending on how much you donate. And this is opens up and widens the donor pool past just, you know, some wealthy private business owners to more of a regular fan who maybe wants to donate a little bit every year, but also a very wealthy fan. Like you said, it's up to $50,000. And if somebody wants to donate more than that, then they can email the president of Bayou Traditions, the person who found his emails on the website, if they want to donate even more. And so this is LSU's next step into NIL. They've done some interesting and creative things, really focused on education for a while, but now they're taking that next step, as so many other programs are, like Alabama and Clemson and Florida State, into directly promoting a collective that will be designed to support these teams and the ones around LSU.
All right, brother. Appreciate the input. It's always good stuff, man. Thank you.
Thanks, Chuck. Have a great rest of your day.
All right. Appreciate you coming on, man. A subsidiary that is a little outside of the normal approach that we have. I'm trying to remember it. What was it? There was a movie company that Disney started when, all right, wherever we want to show, like, a naked female, all right, we can't do it in a Disney picture, start something else. And so they started a new movie line where we can do that. It's not that they didn't believe in it. It's that they had to keep pretending they didn't believe in it. So this collective, we don't want anything associated with our name. And what it is it's not the collective. It's the folks donating the money. And plenty of people are like that. I don't want people knowing my business. Now, there are tons of folks who want it highlighted and name on it. And that's fine. That is fine. That is fine. That is fine. I don't know who James M. R. Bear is. I started walking past an emerging, I think it was a business center, an engineering center, something. His family wrote it. Somebody wrote a check. So a lot of people want that. Some people just want the organization to have the money, or the end result to have the money. And I just want to see LSU win more games. I don't want credit, so I just want to give money. All right, well, I tell you what. For everybody on that really high end that wants to be, you know, anonymous, we're going to have sort of a hush-hush, shh, name, image, likeness. Well, that's not really working. All right, well, we're still going to be raising money that way, but we're off to this side. We're going to have the Vegas Strip Casino version of the name, image, likeness. And that'll allow everybody to contribute $10 a month to $50,000 a year. Just fans. Now, those folks, they want everybody to know. That is, I got the signed Christmas card from Brian Kelly. It's on the mantle, but I also brought it to the church Christmas party, and I showed everybody. That's what you want. So, I've always said, if you think you're ignoring the market, there's a pretty good chance the market's ignoring you. We're going to do this in a classy, private, respectful manner. That's not what name, image, likeness is. It is, like I said, the publicity that Nick Saban was throwing on Texas A&M, Jimbo should have called his good buddy and said, thank you, man, I'm going to send you a case of Cokes. It is exactly how, it's what LSU's name, image, likeness collective just declared. We want everybody to know all of our business. At least as an offshoot of the, here are the really rich people who don't want any publicity. So you still believe what you believe, but you want to operate in the realm that gets the results, which in the movie industry, it was, hey, let's have a lot of more profitable movies. In this industry, it's let's have a more active name, image, likeness collective that gets us titles. So that's that. We're going to break, wrap up next.
The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Moving forward, we can, you know, kind of, again, have a reset and not have a bunch of miserable people out there if we don't go 15-0. Because it's going to be a very miserable life if that's what you're waiting on every single year to determine your happiness.
That's accurate. All right, that's Dabo Swinney, Clemson head coach, and that's just press conference, and all the coaches have a press conference post-signing day, et cetera. All right, he's accurate in his statements. Dabo is very direct and I think transparent a lot of times. He also kind of attacks the fan base a little bit and has, and they went 11-3 following up a 10-3 season. And my gosh, they were only 10-2 before that. What's wrong, dude? Yeah, I know. It's been a while since they won 2 national championships in 3 seasons. It has been a minute. And then they just got beat up on the head, neck, and shoulders by LSU. Could have capped another season, but that was not going to happen that night to an excellent. And then just been a little bit less than that since then. So he's accurate in what he says. This sounds a little bit to me like, and I'll just pick, and this is just, like I said, it's just a very general comparison. The very, to me, I think it's very clear, not contempt, but kind of really people from Steve Spurrier to the Florida fan base. There's a little bit of that to Dabo, to Clemson fan. Really people? Really people? Nick Saban looks at the Bama fan base and says that because they left the fourth quarter of a 56-10 win. Really, people? You left that game. He yells at us. Yells. Nick Saban looks at the fan base, really, people, when they don't show up in New Orleans for a Sugar Bowl or whatever bowl game. Dabo looks at him when he says, wait, we just won 11 games and y'all are not happy. And Clemson fans expect more. They have come to expect more, and it's kind of because, well, it is because of what has happened while Dabo's been the head coach. So that's just kind of what you set yourself up for, and it's not a realistic viewpoint, and certainly not a fair viewpoint from the fan base, but it is the viewpoint they have. Dan, how's your Tuesday going, man?
Oh, man, you know, pretty good. And, you know, here's the thing that I'm going to have my last part on this show about the Kevin Steele hire at Alabama. And I will, of course, have more on it on the Southern Beat coming up this week, which good show coming up. People will be on the lookout for that one. And that is, I made a comment to somebody earlier today about the Alabama, you know, just the hirings and everything. And they said, oh, man, you know, some people just really don't seem to like the Kevin Steele hire. My response back to them was, I'm going to listen to the guys who were given their stuff by the program as opposed to the people who went to, say, the soup store and bought their stuff. Now, nothing against the soup store. You're listening over there in Tuscaloosa and love what you guys do over there. But it's also, too, the point given is that it seems like the loudest voices are, of course, from the fan base, which I understand that. But at the same time, though, too, look, listen and see who is talking up people whenever they talk and they defend them. And it's former players, haha, Clinton Dix, you know, as well as Marquise Mays and Reggie Ragland, even throwing out his support behind the hire for Kevin Steele. Now, I think the other part of this as well is our good buddy Josh Pate was talking about this, and I have to believe that a little bit of this is in play as well. Is I think that Nick Saban probably got to the part of this hire right now and said, "Who do I trust out there?" Because that's what this really comes down to. Am I taking a chance on somebody, which I don't think he has a problem doing? He has shown you in the past he has zero issue doing that. Or am I going to go with somebody that I trust? And I think he looked at it and said, early February, spring football getting going here in about a month, I think we're a little bit late in the game to be able to go with somebody. And then who knows, maybe a month from now I'm sitting in a meeting saying, uh-oh, this is not going to work. As opposed to saying, hey, I know how these meetings are run. I know how you do your business. I know exactly what I'm getting when I bring you into the building. I think that all of that really kind of leads to, what is there necessarily not to like about this? Like I said before, 6 national championships, maybe a little bit of patience, maybe a little bit of belief. And the other part of it as well is it seems like some people have kind of forgotten what days were like when, say, Mike Dubose or Mike Shula were on those sidelines.
Ooh, that is a mark in time. And I don't know if with Nick Saban we ever have been at a point where we have reminded folks about how it was before him. That is an indicator to me. As far as Kevin Steele hire, I think that there's always a math equation. Sometimes it only has this equals our new defensive coordinator. It's he was our number one target and we hired him. Sometimes that's the case. sometimes the equation is pretty good candidate, I trust him, plus it can end the process now before it gets strung out even more. Sometimes a variable in the favor of a candidate is you know that he'll take the job right then and it will end the process. I believe that was part of it with Kevin Still as well. As well as, in addition to, he knows what he's doing. Day one, hit the ground running with Saban's 3-4. He knows what it is, man. So, that's that. Wraps it up on this Tuesday. Dan, David, everybody listening, the guests, thank y'all. 22 hours from now, I will be rested, recharged, and back with more Chuck Oliver Show.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.